I always wanted to invest globally because I thought there was an opportunity. There was just a big opportunity globally. Yep. And part of my reason for choosing fintech is you have the ability to influence people's lives, like through finance, and influence people's lives positively. And you know, the biggest place where you can have the most impact is in emerging markets.
Disclaimer number one, guests and hosts drink on this show, and we ask that if you join us, you be of legal age and you drink responsibly. Number two, if you want to know about check size, stage, similar questions, this is the wrong podcast for you. On Drink to the VC, we're all about digging a little bit deeper and getting to know the person behind the investment decisions.
Hello and welcome to a very special Drinks with a VC. This is season 2, episode 1. Thanks for tuning in via whatever platform you're using. My name is Vic LaQuara, co-founder and managing director of Green Cow Venture Capital, and I'm joined by my friend and co-hostess with the mostess, Bree Hansen, who leads up biz dev for Berkeley and Associates. Hi, Bree.
Hey, Vic. Good to be back.
It is season 2, and we're kicking it off with the number 3 seed investor as per Business Insider's Seed 100 list. That honor was actually just the cherry on top. Our guest is having quite the pandemic.
I'd say the pandemic might be better for him in the pandemic than out. That's how good of a pandemic he's having.
You mentioned that he's been on all of your screens.
Every screen.
But look, Bree, if you were a VC, you know, I would say, okay, closing your debut $75 million fund. That's it. That's cool. All right. Pandemic, you're winning. But no, not our next guest. You know, he was everywhere. He had blown up on Twitter, blown up on Clubhouse. He was the first Zoom bachelor.
And he's on Twitch.
He's on Twitch. He made a cameo in a Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande video. Just crazy things. Setting aside the flash and just getting to the substance, our next guest has been a serial entrepreneur, multiple exits under his belt. He led 500 Startups' fintech fund. He's invested in a ton of startups that are pretty much household names by now, like Flexport and Albert. I'm also proud to say that he's a part of my fund as a venture advisor, and we're very thankful for his support. And he's also a co-investor of mine. You've probably heard his sultry voice on the podcast called The Pitch, which he just sold not too long ago. He's also the co-founder of Thistle. And now I'm running out of breath just talking about all the things he's done. And now he's teamed up with his good friend and the founder of NerdWallet, Jake Gibson, for their debut fund. It is my pleasure, it is our pleasure to welcome to the pod the pride of Franklin Regional Public High School in Pittsburgh, Sheel Minhat of Better Tomorrow Ventures. Welcome, Sheel.
So glad to be here. That was the best introduction I've ever gotten in my entire life. You guys are amazing. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Absolutely.
So, Sheel, what are we drinking today? You want to tell everyone?
We are drinking an old fashioned. And, you know, I think I didn't realize that I am kind of the same as everyone else here. I'm very normie in that I like an old fashioned, like all of your other guests. Old fashioned is very simple. It's whiskey with sugar, bitters, and water with a splash of an orange juice or zest. And I actually make mine very simply, which is I get these Trader Joe's candied orange slices and just stick that in some bourbon and a splash of bitters with ice, and that's it, easy.
Does that make you a basic? I don't know.
I guess I'm a basic VC. Fuck, I'm wearing a Patagonia jacket, god damn it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing everything, AirPods, what else? God damn it.
Are you wearing birds?
No, I don't. I don't.
Or Allbirds? I don't own any Allbirds. Allbirds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, Brie, we might as well just call the podcast, you know, Old Fashions with a VC.
Mm-hmm. We should.
It just, you know, obviously VCs love their brown liquors. And apparently Twitter loves their brown VCs. How many Twitter followers and Clubhouse followers do you have, Shiel?
Let's see, Twitter. I'm looking right now.
I don't know what does it say about him.
You don't have
He
doesn't have a dashboard. He's checking every day.
Yeah.
No, actually, I literally don't understand, because some people are like, I see on there, people are like, I got unfollowed by so and so. How the hell do you know that? I actually literally don't even know. Yeah. I don't care. But anyway, I have 28,500 Twitter followers. On Clubhouse is like kind of weird.
Yeah.
But there, like, I was an early user, and then like I was a suggested user early, and that led to like snowballing effect. So I have like more than 3 million followers in Clubhouse.
How does it, you know, it started as a guilty pleasure for you, but most people's guilty pleasure is more clandestine than like this forum of Twitter?
Yeah, I'd say like, okay, so Clubhouse, like beginning of pandemic, I was like bored out of my mind. We were kind of like on the fun side, we weren't really doing that much either. So it was like every night I'd be on there, and I got like hooked on the platform. Love just like talking to people on the internet. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, all of a sudden, like every night I had a crew in there, we were talking, and then just like snowballed from there, you know, very happy for their success as a company at Clubhouse. And, you know, now they have, I don't know, tens of millions of people on there.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
So chances are, if you're a user on Clubhouse, you're following Shiel.
Yeah, not because you necessarily know that, but because you just are.
That's the default.
So yeah, exactly.
Shiel, like, when did you start getting to become like this influencer status, I suppose?
Okay, so I never have considered myself an influencer. Like no one does anything I recommend.
I used air quotes.
Air quotes. But okay, I think there was, I'm gonna look it up. I think.
So he does have a dashboard.
He does.
No. I think, okay. I looked up, okay, there it is. I apparently in the New York Times referred to me as Clubhouse's first influencer in May of 2020. And then I was like, wait, what?
That's pretty legitimate. The New York Times need me the Clubhouse influencer. Yeah.
Yeah, here it is. I found the quote.
It's okay, not about what you think, by the way. It's what everyone else thinks. That's the definition of a social media influencer. It's not what you know, if you think you're an influencer or not.
Okay, so here's the quote. Clubhouse has already minted its first influencer, Shiel Manat, 38. Founder of Better Tomorrow Ventures, another venture firm. So a couple things to highlight here. One, why did they have to mention my age? What is up with that?
That's tough.
38
That's tough.
Years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, now I'm 39. But, and then they referred to Better Tomorrow Ventures as another venture
firm. I know, right? Another venture firm.
Really unimpressed.
Well, they could have been like the best fintech fund.
Yeah,
so, I don't know.
No, they didn't say.
They didn't give you our introduction, which I think they should have probably called Vic.
No hyperbole, best introduction I've ever received.
Thank you. Yeah, honestly, I've been a little bit dismayed by all of the articles on you Bree and I do quite a bit of research going into this, and
I can tell.
Yeah, and I just think that they none of them do you justice. But I also think, you know, a lot of people, they struggle. They see the persona of S.H.I.E.L.D. They don't know the S.H.I.E.L.D. underneath.
Man of S.H.I.E.L.D.
The man of S.H.I.E.L.D. underneath. And so maybe they just, unfortunately, their hands are tied, right? They have nothing else to, they don't have all those different things that they can refer to like Bree and I do.
I do wonder, what is it like now that you're an influencer and you have people who, like, they see you as a
Everyone who is just listening to the podcast needs to know that Bree uses the air quotes every time she says
influencer. I would use air quotes for any influencer, by the way, because it's funny that social media, it's like, you're a social media influencer. Like, what does that mean anymore?
I agree completely.
If you look at the statistics behind influencers, they're not that influential. But aside from that, I know that you have a lot of followers. You have a persona. What's it like feeling like people now think of you as a persona and they don't really know you as a person?
I think some people are very different in person versus how they are on any other platform. And I think you guys know me well enough to know I'm the same. I don't have a filter in any place, and kind of what you see is what you get. I can't imagine putting on a show because that sounds like a lot of effort.
Yeah. Do you feel and I'm referring particularly, I remember very clearly, I was driving with Laura, my wife, and we were heading up to the mountains and listening in on the last episode of the Zoom Bachelor. And I remember very vividly saying to Laura, I feel like he's letting the audience kind of decide for him rather than maybe showing his cards and giving away what he thinks. Is there, as a persona, right? I know that you just said, look, I'm a very open book, et cetera, et cetera. But is there stuff that you hold back that you keep just for yourself? And how do you decide what to keep for yourself and what to put out there?
There's not much I keep to myself unless it's gonna offend somebody. I don't want to offend anybody publicly. I will say my partner, Jake, he tells me that most mornings he wakes up having a nightmare that I've been canceled for something.
We got to get Jake on this show, by the way.
Yeah, you do.
That's fantastic. Is there, another thing that, again, Laura sent me, and I don't know if you've seen this, but there is a Tom Holland clip from his appearance on the lip sync battle from years back when Spider-Man was premiering. And he did a crazy, it is amazing, this video of him doing Rihanna's Umbrella. The dance choreography is mind-blowing. So anyone listening, watching, you have to check it out. It's fantastic. But he talks about how every interview that he did after that was all about the lip sync battle and not about everything else that he's done. And is there a point where you're going to get sick of people asking you how Scooter Braun wanted to be in the video? Or are you still super into it? And you're I'll talk about it all day.
I don't care. It's pretty funny. I will say, you referenced that list of the top seed investors, and there was that list, and then I think the top 10 had an article about them.
Yeah.
The article about me as the number 3 seed investor was primarily about me having been in this Justin Bieber music video. I actually think it was in the title of the article. I'm going to look for it. Okay, literally the title, VC, Shiel Manat, one of the best seed investors out there. He was also in a Justin Bieber music video. How did somebody decide that that is like worthy of an art?
I do not understand it. And this is part of my gripe with the media nowadays. It really is.
Yeah, totally. But whatever, it's fun. I don't mind. The funny thing is, my girlfriend, Amrita, she was like, hey, when is somebody going to write an article about you and not reference the Zoom Bachelor?
That's a good question. Speaking of the Zoom Bachelor, let's just go right into that. I loved watching it. I was one of your Twitch people commenting, seeing what everyone said. Loved it, really enjoyed it. Felt like it was interactive. It almost felt like I was in some sort of like new media, by the way. And I'm surprised that we didn't see, well, maybe I just didn't see more of it during the quarantine because I don't have a lot of friends on Twitch. But I want to get into you and the Zoom Bachelor. What did you learn about yourself? Because I know Vic was saying, you know, you were asking the audience a lot, but you ended up with a girlfriend, not from the show. So you must have learned a little bit about yourself. And I would love to know what that was.
I don't think there was anything I necessarily learned on the show. I think, you know, like we just have a lot in common and shared interests and values, and she makes me laugh and it's cute. Like that, those are the things that matter.
Yeah, that is. That's the simple stuff that matters.
It's simple, right? Like you get along, you have shared interests and values. Can you laugh? Can you be silly? Can you imagine yourself growing old? These are all the things.
Yeah. That's, I mean, look, your MO since I've known you way back when, hat tip to Rishi Taparia, who's, if you're ever listening to this, Rishi, you're the one who introduced Sheila and I. Your MO has been, you know, the most optimistic human being that I know of. And speaking of and from a perspective of a VC peer, like that's not normal thinking, right? Like Bree's shaking her head. I mean, honestly, I can count on my one hand sort of like the optimistic VCs that I know. And you've described yourself as pronoid or proniac.
Yeah.
How do I pronounce that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pronoid. Okay. So here it is. So obviously you're familiar with paranoid.
Yes.
Which is like, you know, I'm trying to think of how to even define paranoid, but like.
Always worried that someone's out to get you.
Always worried that someone's out to get you. So pronoid is the opposite. So paranoia, you're worried that the world is conspiring against you. Pronoid, the world is conspiring in your favor.
In your favor.
Yeah, I feel like everything just like works out, like somehow like the plan works out in my favor always. Yeah. And like it really, I truly somehow believe this.
Where did that come from? Is that your parents?
No.
Is it?
It's not. I think maybe my dad. Yeah, maybe my dad feels that way too. Mm-hmm. But I feel like things just work out in my favor. I've been, you know, gotten lucky in life. And then also I think sort of from my mom, she's able to get out of any sticky situation. Mm-hmm. And I think I've learned that myself too, which has been really helpful. And like, you can be pronoid if you can get out of a sticky situation and turn it into something better. And my mom is like number one at that.
Yeah. By the way, this is Drinks with a VC. So I'm going to have to ask you to take another sip and cheers to moms,
Cheers to moms. Yeah. And dads.
Cheers to moms and dads both. Yeah. I'm giving myself another pour. So we are in pour number two, which is
perfect. Perfect.
Guys, healthy pours.
And here, like any other high class podcast, we get started half an hour or so before we record for the audience members to kind of get a glimpse behind the scene. So this might be pour number two currently, but it might be pour number three or four.
Yeah, this is a pretty healthy. And
it's a healthy pour.
So I was too lazy to actually make an old fashioned. So instead, I'm just drinking bourbon.
Just straight bourbon. So you mentioned your mom. You know, you're extremely close with your family. Anyone that's following you on Twitter or any of the other channels that we've talked about knows that. To your mom, your dad, your brother. It's really one of the most endearing things that I know about you. And it's how I know that you're not a douchebag. It's because you are this
everything
close.
Everything else says douchebag. But no. Close to, I'm kidding.
No. But I just know the kind of person you are from that. Have you always been this close to your family, or was there something that happened that brought you closer?
I would say, like, I don't know, like, we have shared interests and backgrounds. My brother and I have lived together off and on for the past decade or so. Yeah. It's just been, I don't know, it just is. It's like a default person, a friend. It's easy.
Are you younger or older than your brother?
I'm older, and I'm a lot older. I'm almost 8 years older than my brother.
Are you the eldest child then?
Yeah, just two of us.
Just the two of you. Cool. That's very interesting. So I can relate. My sister's 8 years older than me.
And that's right.
You know, I gotta tell you, I really didn't feel connected to her until after college.
It's exactly,
man. Yeah,
it's exactly what it was.
Yeah,
we were basically like, okay, so here's how it happened. I was a handful for my parents, and so I'm a little kid, very precocious, jumping around, you know, getting hurt, not giving a shit, getting lost because I'm, you know, wandered off in the mall, and then I'd go like, I'd tell people like, my parents are lost, because like and then and so I was a handful, so my parents were like, we don't know if we can handle another one. But then at some point I started to be like, every birthday, Christmas, whatever, they'd be like, what do you want? And I'd be like, a brother. And I'd be like, that's all I want.
Wow.
And so eventually they relented. And not, you know, obviously they couldn't have predicted a good brother. They relented partially because my mom always wanted a daughter. And she was like, all right, if she really wants it, like, we'll try again. Hopefully we'll get a daughter. Yeah. And then they ended up with my brother. But such is life. Anyway, so early on, I was like, so doting. I was like, this is all I ever wanted, blah, blah, blah. And then he's a year old, 2 years old. And then I'm like, this sucks. Why aren't they paying attention to him?
No.
What about me? Mm-hmm. I'm important. And so like from between when he was the age of 2 to like 16 or 18, we were not friends.
Sure.
And then exactly what you said, Nick, like kind of like college and afterwards was really, we realized like, oh, like we got a lot in common. I can talk to this guy. He's really smart. Like that's kind of how things went.
And you almost look at your brother as more of a friend, right, than a family member.
Totally,
right?
Yeah. Except there are things that are like we do. We're friends, but we also like fight a lot. And our other friends love to see it. Like they love like if we're on a guy and like we're on a trip with friends, and then like me and Rishi get into a fight, they're all just like, you know, popcorn.
Oh,
enjoying the show.
Well, it's almost like you're speaking, you know, this very understood language to each other that everyone's trying to kind of figure out. They're enticed by it. It's entertaining. But you sit there and obviously you grow up in the same household. You live with the same parents, deal with the same circumstances, get parented the same way. I feel like there's so much history there between my sister and I can imagine it with your brother and you. It's like, it runs the gamut. So it's definitely one of my favorite things is having an older sibling. I'm wondering, and it sounds like it's the same having a younger sibling, right? I hope my sister would say the same thing about me, but I don't know.
Totally. I think the fun thing for like our friends is like, because we have this like, you know, 30 years of history, we actually like, even though we love each other, we will get in, like we will have like physical altercations. And like,
yeah,
there's no other friend that I've ever like physically like, nope. But this guy,
yeah,
like I'll, anytime,
yeah,
any opportunity,
yeah.
Two things. Number one, I will protect my sister to the bitter end, and it's only me that gets to punch her when I'm four years old or whatever it is.
Totally.
Second, is that I now know how to dance, and I love Prince because of my sister. Right. And so from a younger child to an older sibling, I just want to say thank you and also cheers to that.
Cheers.
Yeah.
But you did say something that you know how to dance, and we are on video.
We are. We have no music though, Sheil. And this is about you. And I feel really bad that I took 2 minutes of our listeners' time listening to my show.
I don't know. That was pretty good.
All right. You know what? Okay, look, let's move on before he gets me to dance. Let's kick
we
off.
We need some non-copyrighted music.
We do need. Otherwise, we'll be banned in Albania again or wherever we're banned.
That's the worst. So this happens. So this morning, I stayed at a friend's house in Woodside last night. And this morning we woke up and had a dance party at like 6:30. And we made a video about it, but there's Lizzo Juice. We were dancing to Juice in the video.
Oh my.
I posted it to Instagram and then it was like, this has been banned in 134 countries.
That's great. Yeah, we might have gotten a little bit too sloshed with Brandon Farwell and our outtakes from multiple musicals probably got us banned in a few countries. So let's take that away. Let's focus on you. Let's kick off our first installment of the new season of VC Unboxing. Sheil, we delivered a couple of packages to you. Can you open up box number one?
Yeah. How exciting is this?
This is going to be fun.
I'm like really excited to see what's in here. Okay, let me show everyone the box.
Okay.
It.
Yeah. Pretty box. Nondescript. This is...
It looks like you took an Amazon box. And repurpose it.
This is good. Okay, these guys know me well. Okay, this is a board game. Pandemic. So,
can you save the United States?
So, A, I love board games. B, I don't know if anybody listening knows, but we have a global pandemic going on right now. It's actually very relevant to me and the situation at large. Excellent gift. I actually have played this game but do not have it, so this is perfect.
Good.
This game, one thing that's interesting about it is it's a cooperative game, so it's not like everybody against each other. It's like, can we save the world together and treat this disease?
Pretty cool. You are a world traveler. But the pandemic clearly halted a lot of that until recently. Did you eventually come up with your own board game, like you told me you were working on, or?
So my friend and I are working on a game together. It's with my brother and others. The idea is that you operate an airline. And you have to buy planes and routes and all sorts of stuff. So that's the idea. More details coming soon.
Oh, wow.
You love those business games.
Yeah, I love business. I actually just like, honestly, love business games, but also just love business. Like I like anything business trivia. I love it. I just love learning the history of companies and history of Silicon Valley, all that kind of stuff. I just eat it up. Any documentary about business, I love.
Yeah. A long, long time ago, pre-pandemic, We were at a brown man's poker night that you and I put together. Yeah. And we were talking over Texas Hold'em. We were talking a little bit about having a game night and playing Settlers of Catan. And I never took you up on that offer. Here's my mindset. I was thinking, okay, Sheila is really smart, really like strategic in terms of his thinking. And I'm really competitive. And I might have embellished that I had played Catan before when I really hadn't played too much Catan before. and so I was like, we never made it happen. And I think maybe subconsciously I did that because I was worried that you were just going to kick my ass and this is going to be like a thing. Are you super competitive? Should I have taken you up on that offer? Does that offer still exist?
Offer still stands. Okay. Let's do it. I'm in. Down to host anytime.
Yeah. So where are you in the scale of, you know, 1 to 10, 10 being the most competitive? How competitive are you?
I think I'm probably like, I'm not top decile competitive. I might be top quartile, maybe not even, but definitely like, you know, upper half for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say at some point, I'm not like over the top, I don't think.
So look, okay. You're playing board games. You're coming up with board games about airlines, et cetera. And then in the meantime, all of those other things that we just mentioned, right? You're on these lists, you close your fund. It was actually, grand scheme of things, no joke, you know, joking aside, the pandemic wasn't good for you, but you thrived during the pandemic. You did fine. Would you take 2020 over, or, you know, you're cool with it and now on to 2021?
It was fine. I mean,
yeah,
I think it was miserable for like a lot of it. And I, at the beginning of the pandemic, okay, so here was like mindset, like, first couple of weeks, I was like, I was completely wrong. And I was thinking like, oh, this is going to last for like a month or something. Right. And it'll be like a fun, like, haha, like that happened. We were there. Like, so I have like pictures of myself, like selfies in front of like empty grocery stores. And I was like, ah, this is a thing. And then like me and my buddy got a place in Carmel for a couple of weeks. We're like, oh yeah, like pandemic, like this lockdown, it's going to be a couple of weeks and then we'll be done.
Yeah.
We got a place in Carmel. And I was like, okay, this is cool. This is fun. And then it was like, wait a second. After that, it was like, shit, this is not a short-term thing. This is going on for a year. This sucks. Yeah. FML. And then that's actually like during that time is actually like when I was really active on Clubhouse was the FML time, which is like, yeah, whatever. And then it was like, okay, here's a new reality. Like, get used to it. This is it. And, you know, living life, you gotta live life. I think like there was that in-between period where I was like not on my A game, and then you gotta come back.
Well, I mean, so as a traveler and an extrovert on so many different levels, what did you, besides Clubhouse, what did you kind of dive into that you were, you know, what were you focused on? What kind of took your mind off? What saved you during the pandemic?
I think it was a lot of internet. So like I wasn't super active on Twitter before, and then I became super active and love it. I think the internet, I think like I really enjoy what I do on the VC side, having such a good time doing it, and I think like that I'm going to keep doing that. Yeah. And like, I've learned so much during this time. I've like, sort of like got really into being responsive and getting shit done for my portfolio founders, meeting new companies, all that stuff has been so great. And I can't, you know, as much as it sucks for the world at large, I'll say for me, you know, it hasn't been that bad. I hate to say that.
Where have you traveled during the pandemic?
Okay, so initially I got a place in Carmel, and then I was like, gotta get out of here. I came back to the city, and then I was like, oh, the city, San Francisco during a pandemic, like all of the things I love about San Francisco are bad. Like the restaurants aren't open, like none of that stuff is open. So then I was like, I gotta get out of here. So then I went to Mill Valley, got a place there for a little while. And I was at least, this is during the depressing part of my pandemic. And at least like while I was depressed, I had nature. So I was like going on hikes all the time, like every day. And that really helped. And then I was like, I gotta get out of here. So me and one of my best friends got an RV, and we just started just driving, and got an RV in San Francisco. We were just like, every day we'll wake up and figure out where to drive. And so we ended up kind of taking it like a really meandering path up the West Coast, ended up in Washington, had a blast. Like every day was such a good time. And that was really fun. Yeah. And then went down all the way to San Diego, hung out with my buddy, Howard Lindzen is another VC you guys should know. And then I flew for the first time. And this is when, you know, everyone was like, you can't fly, are you crazy? But I flew to see my parents in Pittsburgh. Did that for a bit, stayed there for a little while, came back. Then I actually was in San Francisco for the longest time I've ever been in San Francisco. July through December, did not leave. And then went to San Diego, went to LA. Then I flew to Mexico, Todos Santos, which is near Cabo. Me and a bunch of friends went down there. Like we got tested beforehand, went down there. And we ended up renting out the whole hotel to be COVID safe. It was a small hotel, boutique hotel. We had all the rooms. And we just had a blast down there. And I freaking love Mexico. So then last month, the month of April, I was back in Mexico the entire month. I had a really good time. And then I visited Miami on the tail end. Just wanted to see what that scene was all about.
So tell us more about Miami. I heard you ran into Adam Newman from WeWork.
It's true. It's true. I had a really good time. I have to say, like, you know, like I don't have any plans in the short term to move from the Bay Area, but I have to give kudos to the folks who moved to Miami and were like, we're going to turn this into a tech something from not being much of a tech anything. And they're doing a really good job. Like they have got people to go, like I visited, and some people that visit are going to stay. So like kudos to them. They had this crazy party. Founders funded this crazy party. Newman was there and I ran into him. There were all sorts of strange characters. Like I'd like meet somebody, look them up and be like, oh, the first thing that comes up is like Trump pardoned so-and-so. It's like a weird, weird world.
Yeah.
Definitely a weird world. But I had a good time.
You've taken a very diplomatic approach to this. Sorry to interrupt you. You very diplomatic. I mean, on Twitter, you said, Miami is to New York City as LA is to SF. But look, seriously, did everyone just fucking forget that, you know, there really isn't this thriving ecosystem around them? I mean, sure, they've got Keith Rabois and like other folks there, but the universities, et cetera. Like really, what is your take on Miami and its ability to kind of become the next startup tech center or whatever you might want to call it?
I think the thing, the beauty, and this is the thing, this is the beef I have with those guys, is like, there doesn't have to be a startup tech center. Like there will be many. And Miami will be one of them.
Sure.
And that's why I think Miami is to New York as LA is to San Francisco, which is to say, like, you know, people go back and forth between the two a lot.
Yeah.
And like, it's something, it's like LA is not San Francisco, but it has grown in its own right over the past decade to be substantial. And there are companies like Snap, like my portfolio company, Albert, and others, Acorns. And I think the same will be true in Miami. Like there will be some great companies. I don't think it's going to be what New York is, but it'll be great. And sure. like, I think what I find difficult is the people who are, some of the people are, who are very vocal are really like putting down San Francisco, mm-hmm. saying like mm-hmm. San Francisco's over. I don't believe that at all. San Francisco will continue to exist and will be successful, but Miami also will be. And that's great.
Yeah. So I'm not shitting on Florida and Miami, et cetera. I will say that there's a reason. If you look at LA, they actually have more engineering talent coming out of the colleges, universities in Southern California than actually UCLA anywhere else on the planet.
Caltech is amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely. And
so Miami doesn't have that. So, okay, here's what I'll say. You're right, first of all. But I think the opportunity is, can you bring University of Illinois, University of Michigan, Carnegie Mellon grads to Miami?
Yeah.
And like, and I think that's a possibility. And I think that's what they should be focused on. Like Keith and, you know, that team should be going to those universities all the time, recruiting people to Miami. And I think that is something that can be done.
So what do you think happens?
Wait till hurricanes comes.
Wait till hurricanes.
I've been in Miami during the hurricane.
That's so true. That's so true.
I've been, the hot weather, even like during this like Miami Tech Week.
Mosquitoes.
It was hot. It wasn't comfortable. It's not for me, but some people love that stuff. And then, you know, I was like, hey, like what up with like outdoors? Like I was telling you guys, like I would, you know, during the pandemic, I was like going hiking almost every day. Yeah. And like Miami is flat as a pancake. There's nothing you can do. And they're like, outdoors for us is getting in the water and like getting on a boat. And like, I get that. It's just like a different scene than like going on a hike here. There's no mountains to speak of at all.
So look, I don't want to go down that route because, you know, mosquitoes, hurricanes, et cetera, that is
Everglades, you
know, natural
alligators.
Stuff. I get that. That exists. And I agree with Shiel though, you know, just because you think you have something where you're at doesn't mean you have to poo-poo where other people are at. And
exactly.
So absolutely 100% agree with that. Going back to what you said, when does Pittsburgh have its comeuppance, or does everyone from CMU go down to Florida now at this point? You're a Pittsburgh kid.
Pittsburgh actually... Yeah, so I think I don't know how many unicorns there are in Miami, but Pittsburgh has three. So like Pittsburgh has Duolingo, and then there are two self-driving car companies, Aurora and Argo.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh actually like there's a lot of tech talent there, and like the sort of like nerd culture that is probably missing from Miami is very much there. In Pittsburgh, I went to Carnegie Mellon. I grew up there. And they've got a lot going on. It's actually a great place. And a lot of companies are opening like an engineering office there, a second office there. I think it's doing great for what it is. And like the city has had a great resurgence. People who live there, like all these people from San Francisco moving in, prices are going up.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's happening. It's a great city.
For a really long time, if you were going to be prolific in the fintech space, you had to be in New York or in Silicon Valley. And clearly, you don't believe that anymore. I think that's kind of old school way of thinking. Can you talk a little bit about where and the trends and why, fintech investing is becoming so global in nature?
Yeah, so I think, you know, when I haven't been doing this that long, like 6 years, but I always wanted to invest globally because I thought there was an opportunity. There was just a big opportunity globally. Yeah. And part of my reason for choosing fintech is you have the ability to influence people's lives, like through finance, and influence people's lives positively. And you know, the biggest place where you can have the most impact is in emerging markets, because the existing infrastructure is total shit. And so, like, you know, a decade ago, damn it, 15 years ago, actually, I'm too old. I was like working on the ground in India, mm-hmm. doing microfinance. And I was like literally getting on, you know, taking a bus and then getting on the back of somebody's motorcycle to get to a farm to lend them money. And then coming back there to get the money back every month.
Yeah.
And that is highly inefficient.
Right.
And if you think about the interest you have to charge just because of my time going and doing that, it's insane.
Yeah.
So like, if you think about what technology unlocks for something like that, it is truly transformative and can reduce the cost to serve customers significantly. So I think there's a massive opportunity internationally. And I think up until a year ago or 2 years ago, maybe all of Silicon Valley was sleeping on it. Mm-hmm. And now things are changing, especially in LATAM. Like in LATAM, there's so many great companies. So many Silicon Valley investors finally realized that Mexico City is actually much closer than New York. It's right there.
Yeah.
And so we've done, we have a couple of investments in Mexico City. This year, we've kind of been on an international tear, actually. We have two in Mexico City. We did one in Brazil, one in Indonesia, one in Ghana, one in Pakistan, and one in India, actually. So this happens to be, this like 2021 has been a really international year for us. Yeah. Your original question was around like Silicon Valley. I think like our companies in the United States, most of them actually happen to be in Silicon Valley or have some Silicon Valley presence. Mm-hmm. And kind of contrary to what we thought, a lot of people are actually moving here. Mm. So yeah, I don't know. It's been really interesting to see. We really don't care where the company's located.
Yeah.
It's something that literally sometimes we don't even know until the third meeting where they're located, or we only know for scheduling purposes.
Yeah. It's so crazy to me. So this is how small the world is, Brie. Laura was working in Chile for a micro lending foundation. And guess who was sponsoring that micro lending foundation? Kiva.
Yeah.
So, and for the audience members, she'll work at Kiva for how long? I don't even.
A year.
A year, yeah.
Really early on.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
It was around the same time.
I was lending money on Kiva. So when I was in college, I was an international finance major, and I did a whole 30-page paper on microlending in Africa. So when Kiva came out, I was like, oh my God, this is what I wrote my whole thesis on. I'm gonna totally lend money. So I was really into Kiva. So it's really cool that I was living in LA at the time. Kind of weird to think about that. Here we are now.
Yeah.
So cool.
Years later, we were all into microlending in college. What's up with that?
I think this is why, Sheil, forgive me for talking about you with you, but you know, this is why I think a lot of people kind of connect and look to Sheil for, you know, what are the trends in fintech, et cetera. And because you've worked for and shown enough foresight in fintech for not 2, 5, 6 years, but 15 years, right? So it's really cool to see this come to fruition in the fun that you have with Jake.
It's fun that like this category that I love and just would be in no matter what, like is like bell at the ball today, where like everybody's all about fintech. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Definitely been fun over the last few years where like, you know, companies that nobody would look at or even a category that nobody would look at. Like now everybody, people have changed their Twitter bio to fintech investor, didn't do a damn thing at fintech, you know, a few years ago. So it's kind of fun.
Did you, So I'm going to go back to something else that we were talking about a little bit about poo-pooing, you know, San Francisco when you're moving to Miami, whatever it might be. You clearly had sort of this international love very early on, right? And you fill out a questionnaire just like the other guests that appear on our show. And I thought this was crazy. And so now I need to ask you about it. You literally had a job picking up trash in India. And so number one, how the hell did that come about? Number two, how long did you do it for?
Yeah,
my mind was blown. I mean, Bree, I called up Bree and I was like, did you see this? Like, I need to ask him about this. How did this not come up?
Okay, so here's the deal. So when I was living in India, I was like doing this microfinance work and I was trying to figure out how do people live? Like these people that we're lending money to, how do they live? So I lived for that full year on, initially it was $1 a day and then $2 a day for a full year. And I was like, let me just do their jobs. So I started like going out, meeting with people. And then I'd be like, can I shadow you for like a week? And so it wasn't a real job, to be fair, but it was really hard. And I truly thought at that point, especially, I thought like I could do anything. And then I was like literally sitting in a dumpster waiting for people to throw trash in so I could sort out and find recyclables. This is disgusting. truly disgusting. And like you'd get somebody to throw in a bunch of diaper. Like it's truly, absolutely disgusting, humiliating.
Yeah. What did you learn? Other than you never want to do that job ever again.
No, well, I think like, so forget about that job, but just like the whole like idea of living it was like a little crazy. But then, you know, before that, I realized that actually like what makes me happy is like nothing monetary. Mm-hmm. And I like enjoy being mentally challenged. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy being like laughing with people.
Yeah.
And like, give me those two things and like kind of nothing else matters. Yeah. So like living on $2 a day, like I could do that again. Mm-hmm. And you know, fortunately I don't need to, but I could.
But you could.
Yeah, exactly. And that's truly like what gives me happiness. So like there's literally like, I think that was the biggest learning. And then I think also what that forces you to do is like there are all these challenges that come your way that you have to like find unique solutions to. Mm. And you know, that was another learning.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about this. One of the questions I had was, you know, you look like you're having the best time on the planet. Is there something more behind it? And I think you answered that already. I think it's what you see is what you get with you from that standpoint. Did you ever think that clearly nothing is like off base with you and nothing is like out of bounds with you? Did you ever think, because I wouldn't do this, did you ever think that you would post a shirtless photo of yourself on Twitter? and Bree, like seriously, he has 1.6 thousand likes on this photo. I'm not shitting you. This, I mean,
hey, it's getting naked right there on Twitter, you know.
No, like
he's being vulnerable and it was awesome.
Yeah.
It's just for fun. It's what's really funny is like I didn't put much thought into it at all. Like the funny thing is I was literally on another, I was on a pitch meeting and I saw that, I was like, looking at Twitter, saw that picture from Chamath. I had back-to-back meetings all day that morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, hey, like, I think I made up some excuse. And I was like,
sure.
Oh, I got to get off video because I needed to take that shirtless.
You weren't shirtless already. You decided to just take it off and go for it.
Straight so I, like, up. Put my AirPods in, like, got off video because I saw that tweet and I was like, I got to respond to this immediately. And then, and it's funny because I was actually in that meeting with, like, another VC friend of mine had invited me into this pitch meeting to do it with him. Mm-hmm. And so we were in this meeting together on video. And then I was like, oh, like, I have an internet issue or something. I got to get off video. Got off video, like, ripped off my shirt, took this picture, tweeted it. And then my friend, Sriram, who was on the phone with me, was like, did you take this picture while you were on the phone with
us? Oh my God. That is literally, oh man, that is the funniest shit. I've never stopped or gone away from a meeting with a startup. I just want to point this out to the listeners and the viewers out there. Never done that.
I don't do that either.
I wish I did. I don't know, man. That's so you mentioned it was in response to Chamath and to a tweet that he had, and literally, there aren't that many buff Indian VCs out there, and
I'm not one of them. That's for
Chamath. Chamath obviously ranks up, and no offense to you. I think you and I are on the same board here, but yeah. The fact that you had 1.6 million likes, thousand still, yeah, viral in my opinion, is pretty freaking cool. And I thought it was just very honest and funny and in the moment. And I wish, like, more people will look at it that way rather than this is a means to an end of doing something else or creating a followership or
I don't give a shit
building pipeline or whatever it is. And I just wish people would see it for that. There's another angle to this, which is, jokes aside, you are a huge proponent of eating healthy and eating vegan. You're a co-founder of Thistle. And I'd love for you to just very briefly touch on sort of how Thistle came about and then where you think society is going in terms of our eating habits. Are we ever going to get away from animal-based protein? And
yeah, wow, great question.
What do you think?
Okay, so I've been vegetarian my whole life. I grew up vegetarian, so it's like, it was easy for me. Thistle started because, like, I was a management consultant. My old roommate was a banker and our other friend was a lawyer. And we were always like choosing convenience over health. Mm. Like, it was easier to run downstairs, grab a burger and like eat that for lunch because like you want to choose convenience. And then we thought like, hey, this sucks. Like, this isn't actually what we want to be doing. What if there was a healthy meal ready for us in our fridge? We could heat it up in 2 minutes and just eat it. And it'd be like super tasty and healthy. Mm-hmm. I think like, I'm not a health nut. Like, I'm not going to eat food that doesn't taste good.
Yeah.
So that's my like bar is like,
you're a foodie.
A lot of people will eat things that are good for them that don't taste good. I won't do that. Yeah. So the idea was like, can we put healthy, tasty food in people's fridges? And if they're in people's fridges, like, they're going to eat them. Like, you're not going to order whatever else. So that was the idea. We started, you know, a while ago. It's gone really well. It's thistle.co. We're only on the West Coast right now. we're serving some, I'm trying to think even numbers wise, we're serving an insane number of people now. That's awesome. Tens of thousands of meals per week. And it's been really like, it's been really awesome. Like it's, we employ hundreds of people. I never thought it would be this successful, actually.
Yeah.
And part of what makes it work, the unit economics, is it's a subscription. So like we, like there used to be these companies, Sprig and Munchery and, mm-hmm. and Spoon Rocket, and like those didn't work because the unit economics were just too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Ours, like you can get a meal delivered to you for $12, and the unit economics work for a variety of reasons.
Sure.
And it's been great to see. Like we're, and I, it's been great to see. I have literally almost nothing to do with it. Like my buddy Ashwin runs the company. I was a co-founder. I am there for some stuff and supportive, and you know, he comes to me with questions, but he's running the company. He's fucking sure. killing it.
Sure. Second part of that question, where do you see us
evolving with
our food? Yeah, no, it's okay. We're drinking, so you know.
Yeah. Now I'm forgetting everything. what was that about Sebastian? No. Yeah. So, I think like I'm an investor in Impossible Foods,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very excited about the potential plant-based future. I do think we have a long way to go. I think that the way that we get there and the way that Impossible gets there is by making it cheaper than animal products.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people say that they think it doesn't taste as good right now. What's interesting is on blind taste tests, if people don't know, they actually do think it tastes as good.
Yeah.
So when they're told this is an Impossible burger, they're like, I don't like that. But if you're given a blind taste test and you're tasting two or three different burgers, people actually cannot tell. So then it's a question of like, okay, plants should be cheaper because like what's the process of having beef is like a cow is like eating a lot of plants and then like, you know, having this in like this not that great process, farting a lot, which creates a lot of methane
right.
in the environment.
Right.
All these issues are there.
Yeah.
And then like it's a highly inefficient process. It requires a lot of water, et cetera. So if you could strip away that process and all of that millions of acres of land and do it in one facility with plants, like that would be better for the environment.
Absolutely.
Of course, obviously better for animals. So I'm really bullish on this future.
Yeah.
And I do think a lot more people will be vegetarian in the years to come. But I don't even think we need that. I think what we need is like enough people making a conscious decision once in a while. Like I see Impossible sure. on the menu. Let me just order, try it out.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say just try it out.
Yeah. One of the things, and Bree, I don't know if you feel like this, but honestly, if you just tell me it's not animal and it's not trying to be animal and it's just a different kind of protein, maybe I just like it more. Like don't make me compare it to it's this comparison thing that we have in society.
Maybe it should be like Fernet and an acquired taste for you, Rick.
You
know what though, Brie, I think you're right. I think it does have to be a little bit of an acquired taste. It's like, you know what, try this out. You actually might like it. It tastes a little bit like steak. And you know what? Maybe people will kind of gravitate to it a little bit more. They won't say, the texture isn't the same as beef or this, that, or that. Like, you know what? Fuck that. Just, it's a different thing.
And, you know, we're scientists now, right? Like, we know that we're taking the same components and the same properties of one thing and transferring it to another, which, by the way, mushrooms have been doing for our entire planet's history, but we're doing it now in the lab, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, to commemorate this, I think you have got to open up VC Unboxing number 2 right away. Woo. Right away. Right away.
While you're doing it, I'm gonna run another row.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is okay. This is something small. It's like a very light and small rattling. Something rattling around.
Something rattling around. I don't know. Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. What do we have here? Ooh. Cooking class with Chef Parsadi. Vegan Indian spread times two. Live experience. Okay, this is so dope. A, freaking love Indian food. B, this card that they've included is from Rajasthan, which is where my family is from. It's a really cool card. Where did you find this card?
So Laura and I bought that card in Rajasthan itself. I honestly can't remember if it's in Udaipur or Jaipur. I'm 99% sure it's Jaipur.
This place is in Jaipur. This scene, yeah.
And we had, you know, we were trying to figure out a way to make a gift card sexy. So Bree said, make it sexy, and found a postcard that we had bought in Jaipur, and we decided to include it. So for the viewers and listeners alongside, we know that Sheel is a vegan, and we wanted to give him an experience because he is so experiential, and because he would prefer kind of an experience to a thing necessarily. We wanted to give him something to commemorate the exit from the pandemic with. And so cooking class for vegan food was a big part of that.
I am so stoked. You guys are amazing. You guys crushed this.
Yeah. And it is, by the way, I don't want it to be so lightly put, but the fact that you made it podcast official with Roots is interesting to me. And you know, ladies, I think ladies need to stop hitting you up on Twitter and LinkedIn and asking you out. I think it needs to stop.
I'm Googling him, because I noticed when I Google you, Sheel, it's Sheel's net worth always comes up, which I think is the ladies. Oh, no.
What is it? What is the second one that comes up? Is it like
what is up with that?
What is up with that?
I don't know if I would ever want to get to the point where when people Google me, there's like Vikram Laquara's net worth.
I am Googling you right
there's
now.
Nothing. I'm a ghost. Yeah. I'm a ghost.
Yeah. But Sheel, you got net worth, LinkedIn, Twitter, age. See, they ask about your age. They obviously didn't read that New York Times article. It's right there.
Oh man, it's right there. Yeah.
Sheel, I have to ask you seriously though. You're a brown man. I'm a brown man. You put in your questionnaire that Aladdin was your favorite movie. Hold on. I think the most annoying thing that I ever had to deal with was like every girlfriend that I ever had was like, you know what we should be for Halloween?
Jasmine and Aladdin. What a couple's costume. It's so good.
And I don't know. I just, why is Aladdin your favorite movie? Can you tell me?
I kind of like this like street rat making it big thing. Yeah. It like really speaks to me. I like the idea of like pretending to be this big thing and then making it this big thing.
Yeah.
And I like the street rat aspect so much. Like that's like me at the core, street rat.
Yeah.
And so I like it.
Well, so I mean, I think that blends wonderfully into your favorite quote, which is, you know, fail to win.
Yeah.
Presumably it's like, look, you learn from your failures, right? I get that. Can you tell us though a time where you just totally fucking failed and it didn't lead to anything? And you know, rather than like, okay, everyone's into rosy pictures and all that, and I get that, but like what's something that you totally failed at? Because you look at your resume and you were pretty good at everything, right?
No,
that's why I've been drinking.
No. First of all, no, like, well, I think like one thing is I'm bad at so many things. But okay, like an example, this is the first thing that came to mind, but like started a company called Vitami. The idea was vitamins personalized to you. Vitamin.
Okay.
And so you had a questionnaire that would like ask you a bunch of questions and like, you know, if you smoke and how old you are and blah, 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 blah. And then we had this like machine that would create customized vitamins for you based on that and based on the output of that survey effectively. And it just like, it was a really hard business, like competing in that market. Vitamins are a hard thing to sell.
Yeah.
And so it like totally failed. And I'd say like, I lost interest. I was just like, I like didn't use it myself. I was like, fuck, who cares about vitamins? I think like that was a huge failure. And also a lesson that like maybe if I cared about it myself, I would have stuck with it anyway and made it into something. But it was really like a, just do what you care about. Like if you do what you care about, which is like, I love what I do right now.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm going to stick with it. Like I'm, you know, stupid trait to say, but like, you know, like in it for the love of the game sort of thing. Like I'm loving it. I'm just having a good time.
So, okay. You love VC. I know you're very good at it. Clearly Business Insider thinks you're number three in the world at it. Yeah. No, but like, look, if you weren't doing seed investing and venture investing, what would you be doing? Would you?
Okay.
I know you mentioned you were a DJ, which I had zero understanding of. I had no idea.
And you wouldn't predict it because I'm not very musical nor do I don't have any of those traits. Yeah. Okay. So what would I be doing? I think I often think about like opening a restaurant and I think probably a lot of people do. Yeah. I'm very fortunate that one of my best friends, actually, like I was telling you guys, I spent the night last night with one of my best friends and we woke up and had a dance party. That friend owns a bunch of restaurants in the area, West of Pecos.
Okay.
If you've ever been there.
Yes, absolutely.
Fish Company, Wooden Spoon. Yeah. They own Bucks and Woodside.
Uh-huh.
So I get to like, you know, make recommendations to him and see those come to fruition. And I'm like, maybe I should be doing this. Mm. Clearly I shouldn't, because running a restaurant is really hard and an operations is a nightmare and I would suck at it. But I think about it all the time. I think it's something I would like to do. Another thing I think about is, and this is something like, you know, now I would not do, but in my 20s, I thought about a lot, is like being involved in politics.
Mm.
And specifically mayor. Like I want to be mayor. Mm-hmm. I want to be like running something. Like I don't want to be like on a committee. Fuck that. I want to be running something. It doesn't need to be that big.
Yeah.
So like I grew up in Pittsburgh and like my aspiration for the longest time was being mayor of Pittsburgh. And that would be really cool. But now it's not going to happen. Like it's not, I think like I've realized that like the running and the like running sucks. And also like there are all these special interests that I don't give a shit about. Yeah. And I don't want to go down that path.
So if the DNC comes after us and asks us for an introduction to you, we should just ward them away.
Yeah.
You don't want to be into politics.
No, I found the thing that I love.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have another trick up our sleeves, and it comes in the form of a game. Would you like to play a game with us?
I love games, as you know.
So this game was actually inspired a little bit by Stephen Colbert and a bit that he does. and a little bit by one of your favorite books, Ender's Game.
Ooh. The Giant's Drink.
Right, Giant's Drink. So in Ender's Game, there's a game itself called Giant's Drink. Where
it's virtual reality, so Shiel might not like it.
Yes, so it's VR, so Shiel might hate it. But in this virtual reality, the students are sort of psychoanalyzed, and they're given hypotheticals, and they're asked to kind of act them out, etc. So without further delay, if Shiel, you're okay with this, we're going to play a game called VC's Drink. Which is really mostly a subset of questions from Chuck Klosterman's book, Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
Are you okay with
that? Amazing. Hell yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Also, right. It's rare that you would say something and I'd be like, no, I'm not cool with that.
I am now actually, after knowing you for many years, I'm now only now just figuring that out, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
At long last, someone invents the dream VCR. This machine will allow you to tape, or let's say put on stream on the internet, an evening's worth of your own dreams, which you can then watch at your own leisure. However, the inventor of this dream stream will only allow you to use this device when you agree to a strange caveat. When you watch your dreams, you must do so with your family and your closest friends in the same room. Oof. They get to watch your dreams along with you. And if you don't agree to this, you can't use it. So do you agree to this caveat?
100%. Yeah. Like, I don't care. It's dreams. You're like, yeah. Like, okay. Anytime you tell me I can have information, I'm going to say yes to it. No question.
Okay.
Transparent, translucent information for everybody. Totally transparent.
I don't give a shit. Yeah, everybody can have it.
I don't know if I, man, I think this is a big departure. I don't think I could do that. I don't know. I don't want to watch the dreams that I think I have. What is it called when you can like recall dreams? I feel like I have that and I don't want my mom watching it alongside me. I just don't. I'm sorry. I can't do that.
Well, like, give us an example, Nick. Like, what's
no? I'm not going to give you an example. Want. That's really inappropriate, Shiel. I'm
it
not going to
be
give
an
you
HR
an
HR violation.
HR violations across the board. You know, my wife wouldn't talk to me. Can we just let's stop right here? Let's go to the next
question.
Next question, Shiel. You meet a wizard in downtown San Francisco, and the wizard...
I think I've seen one. He thought he was a wizard.
Fair.
Not a homeless guy.
Not a homeless guy.
Yeah, I think he might have been a homeless
guy with mental issues. This happens. The wizard actually tells you that he can make you more attractive if you pay him money. And when you ask him, okay, how does this work? He says, look at this random stranger. Give me a dollar. And I will make him more attractive. And while you can't see a change when you give him a dollar in that person, there is clearly something that has changed and that person has become more appealing. So while the tangible difference is kind of invisible to the naked eye, there is something that makes him vaguely sexier. However, this wizard has a rule. You can only pay him once. You can't keep giving him money. You can only pay him in one lump sum up front. Here's the question. How much money do you give the wizard? He's truly vexed.
It's not, you know, honestly, it's not something I care about that much.
Mm.
So it's never been something where I was really like, oh, I don't like the way I look.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm like, as you know, I'm a very short guy. And
we all know what you look like shirtless.
Yeah, that's true.
That's out on the internet.
But you know, it wouldn't be very much money. I would. Yeah.
Would you give him any money, or would you rob from the wizard?
Yeah, I would be. I'd be like, how much money have you collected today?
Yeah.
Show it to me.
Would you invest in the wizard? Yeah. Would you invest in him, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'd invest in the wizard. No, I mean, I would give him some money. I think like I don't know. I'd give him amount of money that, like just to see what happened, just to see what it was like to look in the mirror.
Just to give your eyebrows another lift or something?
Give my eyebrows another lift.
What are you looking for? What are you looking for?
I mean,
though?
Definitely, I've got this receding hairline, you know, people can see. But it's funny because, a similar question would be like, I have a friend who had a hair transplant.
Yeah.
And it was like, I think it was like $10,000. And like, damn. It's something that, like, you know, I could use, but I like don't care enough to spend $10,000 and more importantly, like the time on doing it. So I think my answer might be something similar, less than $10,000.
Also, can I just say, you know, it's okay to just shave your fucking head. Like,
yeah,
you'll look great. Like, don't stress that shit. That's small stuff. And so I like that.
Exactly.
We don't have much time, but I love that question because I used to ask that to multiple women in Orange County who had spent thousands of dollars on doctors.
Orange
right?
County.
Like, I'd be like, well, those breast implants were $5,000. And they'd be like, $20. And I'm like, so you give a doctor $5,000, but a wizard who's going to make you more attractive, $20. I don't
He's
get
magical.
It.
Yeah, maybe I guess like, if I knew there were no downsides, like if I knew like it was all positive, then like, yeah, why not? Like try it out. Like it might be fun. I don't know. But I don't know. $10,000.
Okay. Bree, do you want to ask this next one? I'm really into the next one.
I do. Okay. I like this one too for Shiel. You've won a prize. This prize has two options. You can choose either, but not both. The first option is a year in Europe with a monthly stipend of $300,000. Okay. And I know you're
monthly.
So you are like five starring this. Okay.
Yeah.
Second option is 10 minutes on the moon. Which do you decide?
10 minutes on the moon.
Damn. I did not expect that. I did not expect that.
Yeah.
We even like upped the money values.
So we did.
We wanted to know what you would go with. Moon. You still went with Moon.
Chuck Klosterman like was $2,000 a month.
Like I don't need that. Like money doesn't change anything for me. Mm. And I can live in Europe and do everything I want to do right now. I could do that. Not $200,000, you know, whatever. I can do whatever I want right now in Europe. But the moon, I can't do that. So this is something totally different. And so it's like, no question. Yeah.
Okay.
So that I get to choose. So
yeah, you chose the moon.
So is that on Berkeley?
Well, if we happen to, start working more with Elon Musk or with Virgin Galactic or one of these companies, I'll let you know, Shiel. But until then.
Look, Shiel has a burgeoning portfolio and all of them are raising at crazy valuations. I think just get Berkeley to, do the virtual CFA thing for them. And I think
if they're fishing, solved. Ren will take you.
Problem solved. I wish we could get into Elon Musk right now because I know Elon Musk is someone that Shiel looks up to for the, you know, does not give a fuck attitude that he has. But
yeah, exactly.
We will move on. Okay. So next hypothetical that we're going to give you. For whatever reason, there are two unauthorized movies that are made about your life. And I'm almost positive, Bree, in having this interview with Shiel, that he is going to have, like, this is not going to be a hypothetical. It's actually going to happen.
Right? Yeah.
I really do. Okay. So in the first instance, it's an independently released documentary. It's primarily comprised of interviews with people who know you and bootleg footage that your parents have of you.
This podcast
Yeah, this podcast, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, critics describe this documentary as brutally honest and relentlessly fair. The other version is Columbia TriStar legend produced big budget biopic of your life, casting major Hollywood stars as you and your acquaintance. By the way, I wonder who you would cast as you in this world. And the critics are split a little bit on the artistic merits and the fictionalized accounts, but the audiences are going goo goo and gaga over it. So my question to you is, which film would you be more interested in seeing?
Ooh, I'm not a huge film guy. Just don't watch that much for whatever reason. I think I would be, I'm really torn here. I could go either way. I'm gonna go with the first one though.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I think that's, indie is probably more my scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That being said, like, I'm not, like, I wouldn't shy away from like the opportunity to have like millions of people watching my shit. That'd be pretty cool. And like, definitely all about that.
Who would play you?
You know, I don't.
Don't say Aziz Ansari. Don't.
Although I will admit, I've met him, and you guys do have some similarities. You're smart.
I think he's great.
He's great. He's great.
He's awesome.
I would love for him to play me.
Yeah.
And that, like, if not him, who are the other Indian actors? Dave
Saj
Patel.
Minaj. He's not really a
actor. I don't think.
No.
I think Aziz would have to be it.
Aziz or
he'd kill it. He'd kill
yeah.
it.
He's yeah.
He's so no, good.
Absolutely.
He's so good.
Master of None continues to be one of my favorite series of all time.
I love that really he just like that. Put his parents on there, and they absolutely. Are horrible actors. Like,
but hilarious in terms of characters. Yeah.
Yeah. Great characters.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Well, that concludes our first attempt at 7 or 5 questions with our guests, and we appreciate you playing with us.
That was awesome. So fun.
That we leads don't... us to our last segment, which is the lost present. That
we yeah. I mean, we don't know if you
much
won
nicer.
Or lost.
Yeah, we're going to celebrate the
packaging
end of the
podcast. Is much nicer. Look at this.
Packaging is a lot better. And that's how you know it's not me who packaged it. It was Reynolds.
Okay, let's see.
Any of our
Ooh,
five regular
Patagonia.
Guests will know what this is.
Yeah.
Oh, this.
It's your own vest, man. Look at the front.
Yes.
What's on it?
A rose.
A rose. And, you know, honestly.
Rose bowl.
We don't know. We don't know.
It's the final rose for
yeah, that's
our
right.
Zoom Bachelor.
The final rose for the Zoom Bachelor.
That's right.
You
that's
guys
right.
are amazing. Wow. That's incredible.
So yeah. our well audience done. Doesn't know this, but we're going to be hosting what's called Invest. It will be a vest fashion show for all of our podcast guests. It will be 1 year, a little less than a year from now. It will be at Berkeley's first conference that we're hosting in April. So I'm putting it out there on the podcast.
Can't
Michelle,
wait.
You'll,
That's gonna be
you'll
fun.
Be invited yeah. to wear your vest in our vest fashion show.
Yeah,
I absolutely will be. That's awesome. Can't wait. This is amazing. You guys are so good at this. I am honestly blown away. You guys are so good at this.
We
so
are good. Literally only as good as.
Should we do this every week?
We can. We would yeah. love to have a little cameo every week of just, you know, the minute with Sheil, and you just come on.
I'm in.
And
I'm super
I think
in.
It'd be fantastic. Bree, what do you think?
Oh, I'm always in for new fun ideas. You know me.
We always like to end our episodes with a toast from our guest to our listeners and to us. It is your 30 seconds to promote a startup, to talk about a cause that's close to you, whatever it might be. It is your way of signing us out from this episode. We are very thankful for you to be on. So appreciative, and cheers to you, Shiel.
Amazing. Thank you, Shiel.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have to say, the thing that I would like to leave you guys with is, if you, you know, I think there are probably a lot of companies listening in here, startups, and if you're looking for a partner for outsourced finance, accounting, tax, or HR services, Berkland Associates is the place to go.
Thank you, Shiel. I'm going to put that on our website.
And then number two, you know, if you're a startup disrupting traditional sectors, global audience, big opportunity, the VC fund to talk to at seed and series A is Green Cow, GC, VC, baby. So those are the things I want to leave you with.
Couldn't think of anything better to promote.
So lovely to be here with you guys. This is so fun.
Oh man, it's been a blast. To our audience and our listeners out there, Shiel was not paid to say any of those things. So no.
I would accept payment.
But he will accept payment. we normally save this for after the show. The only thing I want to say is Shiel is as advertised. The person that you see tweeting and on Clubhouse is the same person that I've had the privilege to know for the last several years. So he is absolutely someone that you want to go to, particularly in fintech, etc. So Shiel, thank you, and cheers to you for being on the show.
Cheers to you guys.
And we can't wait for all of the cameos in the future.
Enjoy this episode of Drinks with the VC? Please be sure to hit those like, share, and subscribe buttons on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, or wherever you enjoy your favorite podcasts.